Amy was not an untrained sociologist wearing college paraphernalia to experiment on human behavior. She was not lying to Noah and Pearl and Harry and Liam. She was acting. Why else would she steal those manuals? I sit down at the counter and wake up the laptop. She claims to be so off the grid and above this computer shit, but she managed to erase the recent search history. My cheeks sting at the idea of her on that floor, trying to block me, trying to clear the search she conducted on my computer. Well, she should have learned a little bit more about how these machines work, what they can do for me. Chrome isn't that simple. She only cleared the last hour of her time on my computer, not the whole fucking history. I know my recent searches, rare books and motels in Little Compton, and it's not exactly difficult to shine the light on her key fucking words. UCB. Cheapest headshots. Free headshots. UCB classes cheap. Ben Affleck. Top dollar used books. Selling rare books. Philip Roth price. Auditions. Casting calls. Blonde girl next door audition. Sublet Hollywood. She also didn't clear her fucking downloads, and I bring up her application to an Improv 101 Improv Basics class at Upright Citizens Brigade, and a script for some short fucking film with a cover page that references a Craigslist ad. So the bitch has run away to try to make it in Hollywood. Making it in Hollywood is the most disgusting phrase in the English language. It's more disturbing than prolific serial killer and rare terminal illness. I can't wait to catch her and tell her what a deluded loser she is. I print her search history, and there is nothing more terrifying than realizing that the one who knows you best loves you least, pities you even. She knew I was fucked up and alone. She knew I wanted a blowjob and a girlfriend, and she knew I wanted these things so badly that I would let her watch Cocktail 50 times a fucking week in my bed. That I would give her a fucking key. I did that, and I can't undo it. But I can find her. I can eliminate her. And I will. She doesn't get to walk around thinking she got away with this. Fuck no. She doesn't get to think that I'm a sucker who you can fuck over and dump with Charlotte and Charles. I lapped her nipples with my tongue, and I ate her hairy bush, and she used me. She is evil. She is dangerous. She's incapable of love. She is a sociopath. Worse than a borderline. That's why she uses fucking burner phones. She's a criminal. She thinks she's so smart, but if you erase an hour, it doesn't mean shit, not unless you erase the weeks leading up to that hour. She thinks life is better off the grid? Yeah. She'll die thinking that. Cunt. I call JetBlue. I buy a ticket. Sorry, Amy. You lose. Chapter 6. If there's one thing I learned from that horny charlatan Dr. Nicky Angervine and his patient mistress Beck, it's that you can't control what other people do. You can only control your thoughts. If there's a mouse in your house, you have to make it your business to remove that pest, set the traps, check the traps. Amy is my mouse, but this is my house, and I'm deep into the extermination process already. I called the UCB and claimed to be a guy named Adam checking on my registration. This is how I was able to confirm that there is a girl named Adam, Amy reserved for an improv class. I gave notice on my lease. Fuck that shithole. And it's time I got the hell out of here. Out of my apartment where I bring the wrong women into my bed. Cold city girls, their hearts are hard and pale. And I can't become one of those New Yorkers who lets the city win. I won't sit behind the counter of that fucking shop the next time some chick walks in and bats her eyelashes at me. I'm fucking done. It's June and the city is ripe with meaningless fecal heat. It will be a different kind of hot in LA, the kind that made the Beach Boys all tan and giddy, a heat that doesn't harass you in the shade. I get on the train and begin my last humid, smelly ride to Mr. Mooney's. I thought about writing him a letter or calling him, but it's been too many years. I owe him a goodbye. My trip ends, finally, and I leave the train where a mariachi band sets up and hoochies take selfies. Goodbye, subway people. A guy in a suit emerges from a deli across the street with fresh roses, running, trying, believing. Idiot. I walk into the butcher and pick up Mr. Mooney's favorite sausages. I hope he doesn't cry. I hope he doesn't try to lock me in his basement. I turn the corner and knock on his door. He doesn't smile. Don't tell me we got robbed again. No such luck, Mr. Mooney. I laugh. He was almost happy when I called and told him about the robbery. He said that insurance money is the most beautiful kind of money there is in this world. Well, what's wrong then? He jabs. Nothing, I insist. I hold up the sausages. You hungry? He pushes open the screen door and waves me in. His house smells like kitty litter and old ladies, and he doesn't have a cat or a wife. He has two eggs on the stove and the radio on. He puts my sausages in the old fridge. You want some coffee milk? He asks. Nope. Sure. He shakes the powdered concoction and sets a small chipped glass down on the table in front of me. He talks about a pillow he bought off an infomercial, how the dame on the phone said he couldn't return it because 30 days had passed. He talks about the eggs at his local market. They used to be cheaper, but now they're ridiculously priced because they're from some farm nearby. In which case, they should be cheaper, he rails. He waves his saggy arm. I don't want to be like this someday, alone, frying eggs, eating local food in a stingy rage. But at the same time, I can't imagine ever loving anyone ever again. Mr. Mooney finishes frying the eggs and sits down with me at the table. The eggs are overcooked, glistening. I think he used a pound of butter, and I don't think he's cleaned the skillet since 1978. So, to what do I owe this honor? He asks. I drink my coffee milk. By some miracle, I keep it down. Well, I say, I've decided I need a change. I'm moving to Los Angeles. He burps. It's wet. Flappy shards of eggs fly out of his mouth. What's her name? Whose name? The girl, he says. Nobody moves anywhere unless it's about a girl. I hesitate, then tell him about Amy, her desire to be an actress, the way she kept it from me. I don't tell him that she was the thief. I knew there was a girl. He dips his finger into the ketchup on his plate and licks it off. You might be wiser to let her go. I shake my head. This is something I have to do. Mr. Mooney sighs. Tip the world over on its side and everything loose will land in Los Angeles. Frank Lloyd Wright said that. He was right. Mr. Mooney rises from his seat and tosses his rank sponge in the sink. Los Angeles is the seat of evil, Joseph. It's the womb of idiocy. It's where everything bad comes from, the peak of the volcano of this nation's stupidity. It's no place for an intelligent man. That's why there's nothing to watch on the damn television set. You're better off here. He'll never say it, but he's gonna miss me. I'll give you my email address so we can keep in touch. He takes my plate and stacks it on his. I know if I offer to do the dishes, he'll be pissed. Email is baseless, he dismisses me. Just promise me you won't waste your life on a damn computer. I say I'll see him again soon, and a cockroach scampers by and he stomps on it with his boot. You don't know that, he says. There's no way you could know that. He tells me to lock the door on my way out. Goddamn Girl Scouts are pushier than ever. My apartment is empty. Everything I'm taking with me is in my dad's giant duffel bag, the one I've never used because I've never gone so far away, never had an occasion to pack up everything I want. My books, my clothes, my pillow, my computer. There's a knock at my door, and I don't check the peephole, figuring it's the landlord to complain about the damage. But no, it's Mr. Mooney, in sunglasses. I can't see his eyes. "Word of advice," he begins. "Get your dick sucked." "Okay." "Get your dick sucked," he repeats. "Don't sleep with actresses. Don't waste your time with In-N-Out burgers. Don't watch too many movies. Don't eat too many vegetables. Don't refer to vegetables as veggies. Don't go in the pool. It's cold and dirty. Don't go in the ocean. It's cold and dirty. Don't have a child. Most born there become whores." "I got it." He stares at my unplugged refrigerator. "Is the shop locked up?" "Yes," I declare. "Bolted, shut down." "Good," he says, and he smiles. "Maybe I'll run away too. Do you want to come in, have a seat?" But there's nowhere to sit. He reaches into his breast pocket. He pulls out a thick envelope and hands it to me. I protest. "I can't take this." "Yes, you can," he says. "You'll need it." He ambles down the stairs, and I realize I might never see him again. I gather my things and slip the key under the door. A fat kid on the first floor asks where I'm going. "California," I say.
"Why?"
he asks. "To make the world a better place," I answer. I give the kid some books, none of them rare, all of them important. The kid is grateful, and I'm noble, and it's true, I am gonna make the world a better place. That kid is already leafing through Lord of the Flies. Next up, Amy, hogtied, sinking to the bottom of a swimming pool. California. Chapter 7. I don't read during the flight to LAX. I don't watch a movie. I fuck around on Facebook. I finally joined for real as Joe Goldberg, as me, but it's not what you think it is. I have to fuck around on Facebook. I'm a hunter, going on a wild safari, and I need guides on my trek through this small segment of the foothills of Hollywood known as Franklin Village. I need camouflage. I need friends. And it's not the worst thing in the world to need people. I am inspired by the Fast and Furious movies where the heroes Toretto and O'Connor can't hunt the bad guys without first assembling a team. I need help finding Amy, the same way they need help finding a corrupt Brazilian drug lord. And I can say this for the aspirings in the Upright Citizens Brigade. They're an open bunch. They accept Joe Goldberg, writer, as a friend. And these people talk a lot about the dry cleaner and Tinder and their shoes and their auditions. And yes, they talk about someone they refer to as Amy Offline. The best resource so far is a guy named Calvin, who works at a used bookstore right next to the UCB. He posted a job listing for someone to pick up shifts, and I wrote to him. I think I have the job. None of the other dudes he knows have experience with a register. I ask him about rare books, if he ever sees any original editions of Portnoy's Complaint. Maybe Amy already started moving her inventory. He writes back, "LOL, dude. We get like one valuable book a year. Mostly people who live up Beechwood dump their moldy shit when they move or their parents die or whatever. Or like people on the block are broke and they try to sell stuff, but it's super easy mostly. It's like you get like a couple bucks. It's super chill, dude." In addition to Facebook and Twitter, Calvin has a website where he reveals everything you could ever want to know about him. He's an aspiring writer-director, actor, producer, sound designer, comic, improv player. Can you imagine yearning for attention so badly that your identity required all those hyphens? He worships Henderson and Marc Maron and suspenders and beards and pictures of beards and Tinder and bacon and Breaking Bad and things from the 80s. In Brooklyn, this guy would be working at a branding firm. He would be playing poor and checking his 401k late at night. but Calvin has a PayPal account where fans can help him pay rent. I could never respect Calvin, but he's easy and grateful that I'm willing to fill in when he needs to audition. I order a Sprite Zero and vodka. My second most useful Facebook friend is an older aspiring stand-up comic named Harvey Swallows. I applied for an apartment near UCB in a building called Hollywood Lawns. Harvey's the manager, and when I emailed him about the apartment, he responded with a Facebook friend request and invitation to be his fan. Angelinos. Harvey is the West Coast equivalent of my old coworker, !Ethan. Harvey is another open book with his website. He changed his name to Harvey Swallows and moved to LA to be a comic at the ripe young age of 57. His catchphrase is, "Am I right or am I right?" He's big into hashtag Throwback Thursday, and he's shared so many photos of his old life in Nebraska when he was married and selling insurance and growing sick with aspirations. Note to self, do not get sick with aspirations. They eat your brain and trick your heart, and you wind up on a stage in a basement saying unfunny things and waiting for someone to laugh. Nobody is laughing and or paying Harvey to say funny things, so he manages 45 units at Hollywood Lawns. The place is a nice change of pace for me. I get off Facebook and look at pictures of my new home. There is a pool. I could hold Amy under the water. And there is a hot tub. I could boil the bitch. And there is a game room. I can choke her with a pool stick. And it's within walking distance of everything I could ever want. Including, of course, Amy. She may not be on Facebook, but you can't pursue an acting career in LA without the internet. A girl like Amy, a brand new sociopath with no agent, no connections, she would start looking for work on Craigslist. Anyone can post a casting call on the site, and actors submit their pictures and resumes constantly, according to Calvin. So I write a casting call, specifically designed to appeal to Amy's overweening ego. Subject: are you taller and more beautiful than the girl next door? Body: indie feature seeks lead actress, stunning and blonde, 5'7" to 5'11", age 25 to 30, reply back with photo / resume. I am astounded by the speed of it all. Within a few minutes, I have dozens of girls sending me pictures. My hands shake every time I open an email from a girl. Some are naked, some are ugly, some are even gorgeous, but none of them are the super cunt. I order another vodka and Sprite Zero, and the two girls across the aisle talk about the bar method, they love it, and carbs, they hate them, and directors, they want to know them. I wonder if Amy would become that kind of person in LA if I don't kill her first. Part of me wants to tell her about the assholes on the plane, but more of me wants to scream at her, to hold her accountable for everything she did, but I can't, not yet. I open a Word document and write to myself. Dear super cunt, you are a vile, evil thing, and I wish you never walked into my life with your gloves and your bullshit. Cocktail is crappy because the protagonist is ultimately rewarded for being a shallow, gold-digging prick. You think that you're headed for something good? You're not. You're callow. Even when you shaved, your legs were stubbly. You were wrong to steal from those people in Little Compton. They're better than you. Blueberries are disgusting, and you will die no matter what. You need a haircut. Your legs are too long. Your skin is a waste of space because there's no heart inside of you. You're too much of a pussy and a phony to be on Facebook. You suck a good dick, but you're not special. You're dead. The older woman next to me knocks on my tray table. She points at my screen.
Are you a writer?
I save my document. I close it. Yes. It's a monologue in this thing I'm writing. She points at the headshots.
And directing? You're casting, right? I see pictures.
Yep. Boundaries. Where did they go? Here's hoping. She nods.
You know, she says, if you're casting something, my niece lives in North Hollywood, and she's very talented. You can see her at GretchenWoods.com.
and that's how it is here. I tell her that I'm making an adult movie, and she gasps and whips her head toward the window. And maybe now she won't go around telling random guys how to find her niece online. But she's given me an idea. Being a writer is a great cover during my expedition. I'll say that I'm working on something called Kevin Mindy Forever, and it will be about me and Amy and our last weekend in Little Compton. It will begin with Amy telling me that she can't sleep in her own bed, and I know how it ends. Me killing Amy. I order another vodka and Sprite Zero and go back on Facebook. One of Calvin's friends, Winston Barrel, has requested my online friendship. He doesn't even know me. I accept friendship with Winston. I immediately receive an invitation to a comedy show along with 845 other people. This is good. When I pull Amy's extra-long body into an infinity pool and make it look like an accident, dare to dream, I will be okay because I will have become a Facebook guy, a normal dude. We live in an era where people who don't have 4,355 friends are considered nefarious, as if socially entrenched citizens aren't also capable of murder. I need friends so that when Amy disappears, my friends can roll their eyes at the idea of handsome, gregarious Joe killing someone. I can't be that guy who keeps to himself. That's too in line with the dated but pervasive stereotype of a killer reinforced by biased TV news shows, no matter how many happy-go-lucky husbands go and murder their wives. We all want to fear single people. It's endemic. It's American. I click through my new Angelino friends on Facebook. I love them. They're like kids, the way they just fucking hope. I hate them. They are like kids, the way they just fucking hope. I envy them. They don't sacrifice their bodies for bookstores, and they don't waste their lives underground riding subways and exposing themselves to chemicals and old shit. People move to LA to make it. They dream harder than people in New York and believe that ferociously socializing is critical, that life is all about who you know. And honestly, I don't hate Facebook as much as I thought I would. Suck it, Amy. Sorry, Beck. Once you're a member, there's a network in which you are the center. It's empowering. Humans are entertaining, fun to look at, so are cats. People are so lonely they spend their birthdays on the internet thanking people for wishing them a happy birthday. People who only know it's their birthday because Facebook told them. I like Fast and Furious to establish myself as a fun guy, and then I write to Amy. Dear cunt, Facebook is only people trying to help each other from being lonely. Fuck you. Love, Joe. The pilot says we're almost here, and I lean forward and see Los Angeles through the tiny window. The city is a grid, and like Amy's bush that first time I saw it, the thing fucking sprawls. I can't help but smile. Amy thinks she's off the grid, but she has extremely traceable rare books and aspirations that require online socialization. I'll find her. I wish I could break open the window right now and parachute into Franklin Village, where I know she is. But then she might see me coming, and that would be like whispering to the deer, "Psst, I'm here," right before shooting it. Chapter 8. The first song I hear in LAX is that ditzy fucking Tom Tom Club song about getting out of jail, and it sobers me up hard. A UCLA brat bashes into me with her oversized suitcase. People are pushy, and tourists are slamming into me, all of them on an exodus to get pictures of Sean Penn, who is in baggage claim. In New York, people fight to make a train to get home, or to make it to the squished aisles of Trader Joe's. In LA, people fight to smell an actor, an old man. I've received two electronic communications since I landed. One is from Harvey. "Wow!" exclamation point. "You have perfect credit!" exclamation point. "Most people who move here have horrible credit!" exclamation point. It is my destiny to know people who abuse punctuation. The other one is from Calvin. We have a Blu-ray, so bring any movies you want to watch during shift. You aren't supposed to watch movies in a bookstore. And I get into a cab and the driver taps the address of Hollywood Lawns into his GPS. And I wonder if Amy took a cab or a shuttle. I wonder when the wondering will stop. I hate this part of the split, when that girl just lives in your head. I need to get laid. And we take La Cienega and the city gets glitzier as you go north and I see women in nighttime dresses walking around in the day, like this is okay. I see homeless people, like from Down and Out in Beverly Hills. And I see the Capitol Records building, and my heart quickens when we reach Franklin Avenue. Amy, Amy, Amy. And when I emerge from the cab, I step into dog shit. Fuck, I seethe. My head pounds, the sun, the excessive vodka. The driver laughs. People in L.A., man. They like their doggies. Hollywood Lawns looks like the building in Karate Kid, and the dogs trapped in the small hot apartments bark as I walk up the stairs. The for rent sign beams month to month. I wonder if Amy lives here, in this very building. You never know. She is just the kind of lying transient who would gravitate toward this. Her sublet in New York was week to week. I should have known then, but your dick makes you blind. Harvey looks older in person. Waxen, arched eyebrows. It's hard to look at him, and I let him talk to me about his act, and I agree to get drinks with him. He tells me my apartment is on the first floor, right by his office, and I brainstorm future excuses to avoid time with him. He warns me about ridiculous shit. One thing you gotta know about the hood, newbie, he says. This isn't New York. You can't be jaywalking. They will ticket you, and those tickets will add up. I knew L.A. was an anti-walking city, but that's fucking ridiculous, I say. Harvey smiles. You sound like me when I see Joe Rogan on TV. Downright ridiculous. Am I right or am I right? Conversations about Joe Rogan are not a part of my life, so I don't encourage him the way you don't laugh at a child who swears. Hey, I say. I saw the sign outside. Do you get a lot of people moving in all the time? World's full of dreamers, he says. Do you have friends looking? Yeah, I say. And this is where I have to tread lightly. I don't want to say that I'm looking for Amy Adam, because then, when she disappears, I will be a suspect. I'm careful. I know this girl looking, I say, but she wants a share. Fact. Amy has never had her own place. She's a leech. Harvey nods. If I had a nickel for every hot babe who moves in here to sleep on the couch and pay half the rent, he shakes his head, I'd be able to paper the walls with nickels. Am I right or am I right? Harvey introduces me to another guy in the building, Dez, entitled Thug Light. He lives on the first floor, too, and he looks like an extra in an Eminem video circa 2000. Dez has a dog, Little D, and some advice for me. He looks at me hard. Do not fuck Delilah. I nod. Word. I need someone like this on my team. Someone fluent in California 90s moron douchebag language who no doubt has access to Xanax and various narcotics. Harvey digs up the keys to my new home and tells me that Delilah is just sweet and friendly. And I know this means desperate and slutty. And he says a lot of the guys in the building are crass. It's kind of like I'm the talk show host, and everybody comes into my office to work out their bits, he says. Why must everyone want to be Henderson? So you come by any time, work stuff out. It's like a Seth MacFarlane vibe in here, you know, Brosif? Sounds great, I lie. Am I right or am I right? He asks, as if he has a contract with himself to spew out his own catchphrase at least twice an hour. My apartment smells like rotten oranges and chicken, and it's full of pink furniture, girl furniture. The former tenant, Brit, moved out suddenly against her will. Her parents showed up here all upset, Harvey says, turning on a pink bubble-shaped lamp and illuminating a Kandinsky poster. She spent half the money they gave her on a nose job, and the rest on nose candy. And then she wound up in a hospital because her nose bled. He shakes his head and pats the hot pink futon. I know there's a joke in there. Funny things come in threes. I'm gonna find it, I swear. Anywho, the good news is you scored, Brosif. The futon, the chicken in the freezer, the TV, it's all yours. Her parents wanted us to dump it. At least I don't have to go to IKEA. Great. Harvey picks up the trash can. I know one thing you don't want is old chicken. BRB, Brosif. It's the first almost funny thing he said. I pull a Rachel Ray knife out of a new knife block on the counter. These are useful, sharp, though I wish the handles weren't orange. I flop onto the futon and the cover is stained. Sriracha and semen. That taped-up Kandinsky makes me miss New York. I miss sex. There's a knock at the door and then a girl barges in. She is like one of the girls I saw on the street. Full makeup and a bandaged spandex dress that's one size too small. She is hot, but not as hot as she thinks. I want her on my team. Possibly on my dick.
Relax, she says. I'm Delilah, and I'm just here for the blender.
I almost tell her that her nickname is Don't Fuck Delilah, but she is talking too much for me to get a word in edgewise. She's late to work, gossip reporting, and she lives directly upstairs.
Apologies for noises you hear in the future. The walls are paper thin.
And that fucking coke whore promised her a blender. She's opening the closet, slamming them. Delilah is full of rage. Maybe she knows there is a building ordinance against her vagina. She points at the Kandinsky.
Technically, that's mine too, she says. But I think you'll appreciate it. You look like you might even know who that is.
Andrew Wyeth, I say. She nods.
Nice, she says. Brit had no idea who that was. Did Shut Up Harvey tell you about her?
Everyone has a nickname. A little, I say. Sounds like a sad story. Delilah tells me that Brit came here to act and wound up hooking.
She would go to Vegas with guys and come back messed up, she says. And she kept trying to get me to go with her, talking about how amazing these guys are and how you don't have to pay for anything and you stay at the Cosmo and have the time of your life. Exactly, she says. So I pack a bag to go with her. I mean, I know I'm not actually going, but I wanted to see them all at the airport in case there was anyone famous in there, anyone I could write about. And at the airport, in one breath, she's like, oh, by the way, you have to fuck at least two of them, but you get to pick which two, and it's not bad, I swear.
So which two did you pick? I ask.
Ha, she deadpans. No, I told her I was going to call the cops and her parents if she got on the plane.
And did you make those calls?
Hell no. She says. She flew back the next day, and I picked her up and took her to Baskin-Robbins and let her cry.
I go to the kitchen and find the blender in the cabinet above the fridge. She looks me up and down.
So, do you have a name?
Joe Goldberg, I say. Do you?
I told you, she says.
I know, I say. But what's your real name?
Ugh, she says. Melanie Crane, but not anymore. Melanie Crane is the girl who fucked up her master's in journalism by falling in love with a married guy at the New York Times. She shudders. That feels like a century ago. That's what I love about LA. It's all new. I'm an undercover reporter and a ghostwriter now. It's possible here to literally leave your past behind.
They all think this. These girls, Amy, that they can leave your past behind. Don't they know it's not that simple? It's not the past if it's not finished.
You should give me your number, Delilah says as she cleans the blender. I get so many invites to parties. You can be a plus one sometime. Get off the block.
She points at me.
Warning, you have to get off the block. People live here and they go to Birds and La Poo over and over again and there is so much more to the city. She sighs. I mean, it's important to get out there.
She explains that Birds is a bright, friendly dive bar and La Poubelle is a dark, hip French bar, and that everyone in the village skews one way or the other. I am reminded of the Office episode where BJ Novak says he does not want an identity at work, and then he burns a pizza bagel and he has one. Fire guy. I am not a Birds guy or a La Poo guy, but I type my number into Delilah's phone. I may need her. Delilah laughs.
I am being a bit of a hypocrite, she says.
And I wonder if people in LA think out loud about themselves the way New Yorkers do, quietly, in our heads.
I mean, I go to Birds almost every night, and I even have a tattoo inspired by this song they play there. But the thing is, I go late night, after I've been other places, you know?
She bends forward and rolls up her dress and encourages me to come closer so I can see her leg. Close shave, self-tanner. And there are words engraved on her inner thigh. Journey lyrics. As if they need to be on her thigh after they've been used in The Sopranos and Glee and every bar in America.
I know it's lame, she says, and she pats my head, ordering me to stand. But you can't live here unless you believe.
Delilah is almost special, and it's a hard thing for a girl to be. Not beautiful enough to be beautiful, not smart enough to be smart. Amy has it easy. She's taller, hotter, smarter. There's something so unsure about Delilah, and she would never be friends with someone like Amy, who gets to cross her legs and eat blueberries with her greasy hair. Delilah is a girl who tries. Amy is a girl who takes. At the end of the day, trying is better. I know that now. There's a quiet moment where Delilah and I could run away together and our dynamic would be set. I would inspire her to let go of the aspirations that are holding her down, marking her body. She would get me off Amy, but I want revenge and Delilah wants her blender. She waves. She goes. The end. I download Journey. I picture Delilah's thigh pressed against my face and I jerk off on my pink futon. Afterward, I shower and put on jeans. I refuse to wear shorts and a t-shirt. I throw away Brit's food, diseases, cocaine residue, and I stop by Harvey's office. He's taking a selfie and the trash can he didn't bring back is sitting there. This is so different from New York. I could go months without seeing a neighbor in my old building. But Harvey's office is a glass box. Everyone here wants so badly to be watched, noticed. And the upside is that the desire to be watched is a blindfold. Harvey doesn't even notice me as I walk by the door and begin my hunt for Amy.
Chapter 9.
The self-serving sociopathic greedy little bitch wouldn't go a fucking day without her superfruits. So my first destination is the neighborhood grocery store, the pantry. But this is not a grocery store. It's a modern art museum, part neon, part busted fender metal, and part repurposed wood signs. The floor is spongy, and the font on the price tags is curly, and the lighting is non-fluorescent. The music is louder than it is in a normal grocery store, and the songs are all over the place. A true mixtape. Donny Hathaway, and Samantha Fox, and the Everly Brothers, and DMX. And I Shazam it all because I want a record of this. This is a grocery store if Cameron Crowe made grocery stores, and the lighting is good, dim and clubby. Every aisle has a funny name. There's an aisle of books, before they were movies. Snacks, bad things, spices, rosemary and thyme, and processed cakes and cookies, scrumptious empty calories. The pet food aisle is jamming, and that's called unconditional love. And the baby food aisle is called semi-unconditional love. Most of the girls here are like Amy, tall and scraggly with messy hair and baskets full of superfruits. This is where I'm gonna find her. I know it, but I don't find her in the organic produce section, because me, or the section of cheaper produce, because rent. Fatboy Slim's Talking About My Baby comes on, and when the hell do you hear that in a grocery store? I don't think you could ever get annoyed in here. And maybe I could like LA. Or at least this one part of it. The flower section, I'm sorry / I love you, is a desert, and nobody loves anybody in LA. There are orchids and roses, and then I see violets, more electric and purple than the ones I got for Amy. A little rotund Mexican woman in a pale blue smock smiles.
They are painted, sir, she laughs. God doesn't make these.
Of course he doesn't. These flowers are the botanical equivalent of breast implants. I thank her and move on, and everyone in here is so happy. My phone buzzes. 6 consecutive texts, all of them images, all of them from Delilah. I open them one by one. Screen grabs of invitations to Hollywood parties, complete with home addresses, parking instructions, corporate sponsor logos, and dates and times. One of these parties is at Henderson's house. Henderson. I will kill the broken part of my brain that wishes I could tell Amy about this. I text Delilah. Thanks. I'll let you know. She texts back.
Have fun with Calvin. Smiley face.
I stop moving. This isn't right. I didn't tell her where I'm working. I type, huh? She writes back,
we're buds. I saw him on the way to work. He's cool. Have gun.
She deliberately left the typo so she could text me again 10 seconds later.
Have gun. Ha. Fun. I love autocorrect.
Ugh. I don't write back to don't fuck Delilah. I walk to Freezer Burn, the aisle where they keep the single people servings and the yuppie flash frozen vegetables, and standing there in front of the pre-made meals is Adam Scott. It's my first celebrity sighting, and I fucking love him in Step Brothers, and Burning Love, and Friends with Kids. And my palms get damp, and maybe I really am becoming an Angeleno because this actually feels important to me. And I'm not alone. An aspiring actress is looking at him while typing into her phone, and so is a dorky guy holding a pack of frozen asparagus. A couple of high school girls giggle and take a picture of him, and that's when it hits me. The good thing about social media and celebrity spottings is that the net is cast wide, all over the world, 24 hours a day. Facebook isn't enough. I need to use all of it. I pull out my phone and download Twitter and Instagram, and it's the most difficult thing I've ever done. Candace Peach, Benji Beck, don't touch this because this is me surprising myself, doing something I never thought I'd do. I follow Adam Scott on Twitter and search for his name. Sure enough, people have tweeted, and apparently Joshua Jackson and his unfairly pretty girlfriend are also here.
Oh my god, literally just saw Pacey, # Dawson's Creek, # Pantry, # I love LA. How hot is Adam Scott? He's so hot the frozen foods are all melting at the grocery store right now. Not saying which one, # greedy.
Diane Kruger is too pretty, # not fair, # celebrity sighting, # can't I just get groceries?
LA, where you can't get groceries without feeling like a # loser, # pantry, # Adam Scott, # Josh Jackson. #
Diane Kruger, # I haven't booked anything in 4 months.
I look at the counter and there he is, Joshua Jackson. He's laughing. He's close. People here aren't just shopping for overpriced fruit. They're looking for celebrities. Just like I'm looking for Amy. I approach a guy unloading peaches.
Bruh, I say, because I'm going native.
No offense, dude, but are they serious with the prices?
I know, he says. Dude, don't tell him, but I'm all about Ralph's. The one on Western, you can buy like 50 burritos for $5.
Yeah, I say. I lay my trap. My girlfriend, though, she's supposed to go to Ralph's, but then she comes here and blows all my money on Barry's and Wolfgang Puck. She swears she doesn't, but we work opposite schedules, so I can never catch her. He laughs. His name is Stevie. And he's an actor / drummer, and he asks what Amy looks like. Stone Cold Fox, I say. Long blonde hair, blue eyes,
She always wears random college shirts and denim cutoffs and big bright sneakers. You can't miss her. Zebras stand out in the grass, and she is nothing like the LA cunts in their maxi dresses or their I don't have a job and I just sweat it a lot outfits. He says Amy sounds familiar, especially the sneakers. When did you think you saw her? I ask. The wheels are turning in Stevie's chemical-addled brain. He holds up a hand.
Dude, he says. She was in here like 3 days ago with this other chick, and they were drunk and eating blueberries, and I was like, you ladies gotta pay, and they ran.
Yes. Who was the other girl? I ask. He shrugs.
I mainly saw yours, he says. She was fine.
Stevie and I high-five, and he wants to text me if Amy comes around. I tell him no, that's cool, but he's got his hands full here, I see that. But he insists. He's bored as fuck, and he can totally snap a pic of Amy on the down low. I test him. Seriously, bruh? He nods.
Word.
To the mother, I confirm, surprised that there's no irony at play. We exchange numbers, and I fill my cart with Rice Krispies and milk and Wolfgang Puck salad and deli turkey. When I'm cashing out, the woman smiles, giant.
Ray and Dottie send their love.
Who? I ask. The Botox mom in back of me awes.
You are too cute, she says. You're new. They're the owners, she says. That's a pantry thing. Ray and Dottie send their love.
I look at the cashier. She nods. Ray and Dottie are fucking geniuses. What better way to win over a city of rejects and desperados than by creating a business where the last thing they do before they take your money and send you away is give you love? My tour continues, and I pass the dilapidated bookstore where I'll be working. A sign in the window reads, "Back in 5 or 10," and I continue toward the UCB theater. It's smaller than I expected, like a storefront. Posters cover the glass begging for my attention, and a chubby girl holding a clipboard asks me if I want a ticket. Yeah, I say, improvising. Does the beginner class have a show soon?
Which class? She asks.
Someone inside pounds on the window and she waves her clipboard.
Did you want a ticket for the Master Blasters at 5?
No, I do not want that. She burrows back into the building and I keep walking. I'm almost home, near the corner of Franklin and Tamarind, and walking here is uncomfortable. Not like strolling in New York. I take out my phone and check Facebook and fuck it all because someone's commented about off-the-grid Amy dropping out of her UCB class. My head pounds, the heat, the news, fuck. And then it's that phenomenon, where you're thinking about someone and they suddenly appear. Because right there, in the window of Bird's Rotisserie Chicken Cafe and Bar, is a photo of Amy. It's a surveillance shot, grainy, black and white, but it's her. Down to the long blonde hair and Stanford swimming t-shirt. Beneath the photo are the words, "Window of Shame." I go into Bird's. I sidle up to the bar. When the hot bartender chick asks what I want, I tell her to surprise me. I smile. This woman has to want me. That's how I will get her to tell me about Amy. She winks.
I hope you like pineapples.
I fucking hate pineapples. Love 'em, I say. Bring it. Her tits are hard, fake. Harsh like her, strapped against her chest by her black tank top. Her name is Dina, and she is what happens when the hot girl in the Guns N' Roses video grows up. It's real now, and she tells me how Amy made it onto the Window of Shame.
She started coming in a couple weeks ago, she says. She was a pain in the ass from day one, asking for blueberry vodka and sending back drinks claiming they were weak or not what she wanted. Totally shady. Like, bitch, I saw you water it down.
Then she just walked out, didn't pay her bill. The worst, I say. Did you call the police? Dina stops shaking my drink and looks at an old guy with slick red hair. They laugh in an inside joke sort of way.
Did we call the police? She repeats.
How many minutes ago did you move here? The man asks. Earlier today, I say. Dina gets excited and rings a bell and grabs a megaphone, and I get a free shot of Patron. The man introduces himself to me. His name is Akeem, and Dina says they didn't call the cops because this is Hollywood. She shrugs. They have better things to do than chase down girls who run out on checks. Dina says that Amy is allowed at La Poubelle because it's different there. Guys buy drinks for chicks like that, model types. She doesn't mask her disgust. Personally, I don't go anywhere where I can't pay for my own booze. Self-respect. I stay at Bird's for hours, drinking that pineapple shit, making things right with Dina, laughing at her jokes, letting her be the one to tell me that she doesn't date customers. I leave a fat tip and bring my groceries home and change and rush over to La Poubelle, the place where Amy should be. It's a long, dark bar, like the hull of a Parisian pirate ship. I sit in the back corner. I stay until 2, waiting for Amy to get there. I buy some Xanax off Dez. I'm sure that I'll find Amy within 24 hours, 48 at the most. She doesn't have class. She'll be here. She will. Chapter 10. But she wasn't there. She didn't go to La Poo that night, or any night. And now it's been a month, and I've tried everything. Hiking, Craigslist, breaking into Harvey's occupant database, even Pilates. But I still can't fucking find Amy. All I have to show for it is a farmer's tan and a bunch of new muted button-down shirts that I never would have bought in New York. My brain hates me for all the stupid casting calls I've posted. None of it works. I stay optimistic. I listen to Patience by Guns N' Roses, and I think of hunters and explorers who spent countless nights in the wild, unsure of where they were, or if they would find what they were looking for. But LA is fucking monotonous, and it's wearing on me, the way I keep not finding her. And when I try to talk to people, everyone says the same thing. Tinder. Fuck them. Amy's not on Tinder. She's too smart, too phony, too old-fashioned. We are the same. I get so mad that I can't sleep, and Dez laughs. You do like your downers. And I collect Percocets, just in case I need to drug her. I hate it here. Everyone is wrong. Delilah is bad at flirting. Harvey is too aggressive about drinking. And every day is actually 3 days, a freezing morning, a blistering day, and a cool night. You need a lot of clothes, and every day is the same, which is why it's important to hang a calendar. I see why people move here and wake up one day scratching their heads, wondering when they turned 40 or what year it is. It's claustrophobic, and I have no car, and I hate Amy for not being on Facebook, for not having an email I could hack. I live almost exclusively in this one giant square of earth bound by Tamarind Avenue on the west and Canyon Drive on the east. In New York, you can walk for hours and go unnoticed, and you can follow a woman for several blocks without her knowing. But the cliche is real, and people don't walk here unless it's to improve their precious fucking bodies or to reach another form of transportation, a car, a bus, a lift. They put on sneakers and carry silver canteens around, and what I would do to just have 1 hour on 7th Avenue in the middle of the night. I miss being invisible. I think I might be getting fat, too. Every day, some awful noise wakes me up. Stevie from the pantry accidentally texting me instead of his girlfriend, Harvey practicing his ukulele, or people showing up to shoot piece-of-shit shorts in the building. I am not a snob. But the average person here is just, well, it's not New York. I stare at my popcorn ceiling and think about my beautiful old apartment. I check up on Pearl and Noah and Harry and Liam. I live vicariously through them now. Sometimes I think about friending them and confessing everything. Maybe Amy mixed up and told one of the girls something that would help me find her. But she's a professional. She knew what she was doing. At the beginning of July, I sign a rent check and hand it over to Harvey. Don't look glum, he says. They say it takes about 10 years to settle in here, You gotta stay positive. Am I right or am I right? I give him the thumbs up he wants so badly, and he claps. And I flee, and I'm so sick of the stupidity of it all. Harvey and his big fucking smile. My boss Calvin, who is a whole other kind of annoying. It's nothing like Mooney Books, and Calvin is one of those people who is better on Facebook than he is in real life. He would be wiser to evaporate and live exclusively online with his telegenic swath of thick, dark hair. I want to wipe it the fuck off his forehead and take his stupid oversized eyeglasses, too. I feel that way a lot here. Like I want to tear people's clothes off their bodies in a non-sexual way, shave their heads, line them all up for Silkwood showers. Calvin keeps all his passwords on a piece of paper in his wallet, fucking moron. And there's always a movie playing in the bookstore, as if this is a video rental store in the 90s. Today, it's True Romance, so that Calvin can tell me for the 50th time they shot part of it up the street on Beechwood. Sup, Joe Bro? Sup, Calvin? Something is always up with Calvin, and he launches into a story about his manager that sounds made up. In the past month, I've learned that there are many Calvins, dependent on which drugs he's on. There is cocaine Calvin, amping up for a Better Call Saul audition. There is marijuana Calvin, chill and watching Tarantino and dreaming of being in a Tarantino movie and laughing out loud at jokes that are meant to make you smile. There is reject actor Calvin, gut protruding through a tight purple t-shirt, glasses on, reeking of hair products, telling me to be quiet because he's visualizing. Some days, Calvin is a writer. He puts his hair in a ponytail. He works on something called Ghost Food Truck. Some days it's a self-aware campy teen horror flick about a haunted food truck. Some days it's a pitch for IFC about a food truck that is run by ghosts. Offbeat, he likes to say, as if this somehow means a TV show doesn't need a story. Still other days, GFT is a pilot script, possible HBO or FX, but never network, about a serial killer who roams the country killing people and making burritos out of them. The thing is, Ghost Food Truck is like Calvin and like everyone here, so flipping flimsy. It changes depending on what he watched last night, on what his friends watched. At least today I'm dealing with the good kind of cocaine Calvin. He's dancing and pounding his chest and telling me about True Romance again, and he's best like this. Getting hyped for an audition, wearing himself out like a toddler. He leaves to try and make it in Hollywood, and I post another useless casting call on Craigslist. Tall, blonde, beautiful. My listings are getting more uninspired as time goes by, and every day that Amy doesn't submit a headshot to one of my imaginary castings, I feel like a detective in one of those shows where they hit you over the head with the fact that a missing child becomes almost impossible to find when 24 hours pass. It could drive you nuts searching for someone in LA, and that's why people here are so miserable. It is fucking hard to find things. Fame, love, parking spots, cheap gas, good inexpensive headshots, an agent, a manager, a happy hour where the nachos don't suck, a tall blonde con artist named Amy. It's been a long month without rain, without clouds, without a sighting. And it sickens me to look back because I've done my part. I set my traps. I assembled my team. Calvin knows to text me the second anyone walks into this place with a copy of Portnoy's complaint, and Amy should have been in by now. How does she pay for her fucking superfruits? Harvey knows to tell me if any new girls show up, tall blondes in collared shirts. Dez, too. Dina from Birds quit, but I set better traps there, as well as Lapu and all the places in between. I bought bottles of prenatal vitamins and told the bartenders that my estranged girlfriend is pregnant. I worked up some tears. The female bartenders at Birds said we're all family in the village and they couldn't get over how sweet I am, carrying vitamins around. The guy behind the bar at La Poubelle was empathetic. He looked me in the eye and lifted the bag and promised me he'd be on the lookout. I had so much hope. So why the fuck haven't I found her? Calvin comes back, all coked up,
hooting and hollering and doing a stupid jig he does after he nailed it. He goes on Tinder. Jesus, I say. Didn't you just hook up last night? He nods. That's not what I'm doing now. I'm working it, Joe bro. Tinder is the most important casting database in the world, he raves. The place where every